From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor releases a bill to extend public financing of political campaigns to statewide races. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on whether the bill has a chance, and education remains among the top concerns for parents, teachers, and public officials. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. As the end of the legislative session nears, Governor Cuomo released his bill to extend public financing of political campaigns to statewide races. But he still faces resistance from some factions in the legislature, as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Cuomo's talked of his support for a public campaign finance system for statewide races based on the New York City model, but this is the first time that he's revealed the details of the actual legislation. The governor says the measure, plus other reforms, are long overdue. He says the seemingly endless string of scandals at the Capitol this session only underscores how much change is needed.
The past few months are really just the accelerant. You needed public finance and campaign finance reform done 10 years ago. We've been talking about this.
The public campaign financing option would offer a 6-to-1 match for individual contributions up to $175. It would be paid for using money from the state's general fund, as well as a checkoff box on state income taxes and from the state's abandoned property fund. The legislation also limits campaign contributions across the board and requires more disclosure of donors. The new rules would not affect Cuomo's reelection efforts in 2014 or any other state races that year. It would not begin until January 2015. The governor also focused on a related reform proposal to give the state's district attorneys more powers to prosecute corruption-related crimes in state government, like bribery and embezzlement. Onondaga District Attorney William Fitzpatrick is one of several DAs who came to the Capitol to support the measures. He likened the string of corruption cases in state government to a disease.
When you have 35 elected representatives in the past 6 years who are either under investigation, indicted, or convicted, there's a cancer on the legislature.
Cuomo faces stiff opposition from Republicans in the state Senate on part of his proposal. The Republicans say public financing of campaigns is a waste of the taxpayers' money. The GOP co-leads the Senate with the Independent Democratic Conference, four Democrats who split from the mainstream Democrats. Cuomo left it to the Brennan Center's Michael Waldman, one of the reform advocates who spoke at the event, to put the pressure on the Republicans and their independent Democratic allies to act.
This is not a matter of procedure or rules. This is a matter of political will. The majority of the votes in the Senate have come out for legislation of this kind. There's no excuse for failing to bring legislation of this kind to a vote. And lawmakers who use excuses will have the stain of the state's corruption on their hands.
The governor did not rule out altogether splitting the public campaign finance portion of the legislation off from the other bills in the face of GOP opposition, and he says he does not see an easy glide to passage of the reform legislation. But Cuomo warns that if the legislature does not act on some of the proposals, he'll begin an investigation of legislative corruption using powers given to governors in the state's Moreland Act.
This legislative initiative or a Moreland Commission will advance the public trust. One way or the other, we'll get it done by the end of next week.
Senate Republican Leader Dean Skelos, speaking earlier in the day, says he's open to a number of the governor's reform proposals and predicts that there will be some sort of deal reached. But he says he doesn't foresee any scenario in which the public campaign financing part of the legislation would come to the Senate floor for a vote.
I've said that we're not in favor of taxpayer funding of campaigns. I'd rather take the $200 million that we estimate, and our finance committee is pretty good at coming up with appropriate numbers. I'd rather put it into education, infrastructure, job creation, child care. There are a lot of areas that we can use that money for.
Cuomo estimates that public financing would cost far less at around $41 million. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, of course, the Legislative Gazette going out to public and commercial stations across the state, but that information isn't free, and if you're listening to us on any of the number of stations across the state, WXXI, WFUV, others, WNYC, then you want to make sure you support your local station.
Yeah, look, this is a different model than fee-for-service. You buy the New York Times on the weekend, you pay a lot of money. What happens in public radio particularly is you get the information, which is one of the few places you do get this kind of information, and then in the end, you put something into the pot, and it really supports that station. We at this station have a wonderful record, and I know that's true with other public radio stations around the state, but it's only possible when everybody puts a little bit in themselves.
Well, let's now move to the news of the week, and we look at just about a week left in the legislative session, and Governor Cuomo trying to get some last-minute agenda items in. He still doesn't have the Women's Rights Act. And he introduced this week a bill on public financing of campaigns.
The real question, David, is whether he wants what we call the issue or whether he wants results. Now, on gay marriage, he got results. No two ways about it. He deserved a lot of credit. On guns, he deserves a lot of credit, at least the way I see it, for what he achieved. But on these others, if he really wants them, he'll get them. If he wants a women's equality, he says he wants it, but he's got to pull Dean Skelos into his office and say, Dean, if you want to stay as leader, because there are more Democrats than Republicans, the way we've arranged things here, you've got to give me this. And if he doesn't, then I'm going to know or think or suspect that he doesn't really want what he says he wants. And the same thing is true with campaign financing. Look, this governor has collected a lot of money. He hangs around with the rich and the famous and the rest of it. They put a lot of money into his campaigns and the rest. So does he really want a system where Joe Schmo from around the corner can campaign against him, can get state funds and have a campaign? I don't know. I know one thing. Shelley Silver says he wants it in the assembly, and the governor says he wants it. If they want Skelos, go back to the other issue. He brings Skelos in and says, you want to stay the leader? You do it. If you don't want to stay the leader, I'll bring all the Democrats into one room, and I'll make darn sure that they're all going to be on one team, and you're out. Now, a lot of people think that Andrew Cuomo, and I'm one of them, wants the Republicans to be in power so that they can put a halt on how much the Democrats get in the state, because he wants to run for president and he doesn't want to run as a wild liberal. He wants to know to be seen as a balanced governor who takes economic development seriously and co-opts a lot of Republicans.
A big rally was held over the weekend on Saturday, June 8th, about education, about testing and other problems that people and unions like NYSET, the New York State United Teachers, feel are affecting education right now. Strangely on a Saturday, but nonetheless, big group came down and protested.
Look, they got a huge group. The weather wasn't the best. It was threatening and all. But a lot of teachers came down. I have found them in my work here to be incredibly passionate about the subject. Look, if you want to test and hold them responsible, fair, but give them the tools to do it with. Give them the money, pay them what they're worth, and make sure that before you set up some kind of, quote, core curriculum, you make sure that everybody knows what's in it. And I think that there are a whole bunch of politicians out there now who know how to scapegoat teachers. And they say, oh, they don't work hard. They get there at 9 and they leave at 3. That is baloney. We all know it. I've been married to a teacher. I know how hard she worked when she was a high school teacher. Then she went to college teaching. She still worked hard, but nothing like when she was teaching high school, I can tell you that. So this business of politicians stepping on teachers' shoulders is nothing more than despicable. And I think that we should be honoring our teachers a hell of a lot more than the kind of shenanigans that I see some politicians engaging in.
From teachers to farmers, you spoke with Republican Congressman Christopher Gibson this week, and he seems to think there's going to be some positive move forward on this farm bill, which is going to be voted on next week. But of course, upstate New York, a lot of farms and a lot of small farms, and for years we've been watching the farmers suffer.
The devil is in the details, David. The problem here is that it's geographical rather than political. The middle of this country is controlled by the agribusinesses, thousands of acres and farms. And here we have working farmers in the Northeast, the cheese capital and milk capital. And these poor farmers, well, frankly, have been screwed. They can't make a living. The middle people take most of the profit. They get very little. And so what happens is you have this coalition, Republicans, Democrats, and others, who really understand they've got to produce for these farmers and come up with some kind of insurance program so that if something goes wrong, the farmers will be protected. They say they've got that now. But I think the devil's in the details, and we're going to have to really watch and see what the policy that emerges is.
Finally, Alan, a tradition in Albany, the LCA show, where they poke fun at politicians, and it's sort of a chummy gathering. But there are some media ethics involved.
Well, there's no question about that, David. When the reporters and the politicians get too close, you don't have this arm's length relationship. People start getting obligated to each other. You have the spectacle of selling tickets to politicians. That's not right. You know, if that was happening in the regular life, reporters would say that's a conflict of interest. That's not right. But in this case, it goes on. It has for all of these years. Look, if you talk to these people, they'll say, no, nothing like that. But in fact, it is something that from time to time raises a lot of eyebrows around Albany. And I know there have been editors and others who have refused to take part in the LCA show, as well as buying tables and things. It goes back and forth between doing it and not doing it. But I can tell you that it does raise some concern, and I think it needs to be explored. And there's going to be very few people in the press who are going to be willing to explore it. So we mention it here. We do it almost every year.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As another school year comes to a close, education and education funding remain among the top concerns for parents, teachers, and public officials. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
President Barack Obama's Early Learning Days of Action initiative was highlighted in New York last week as Congressman Paul Tonko read to 16 children enrolled in what's called the Butterfly Class at Albany Head Start. The pre-K students were delighted with Tonko's chosen work, Welcome to Kindergarten by Ann Rockwell. Events like this are used to show support for the Obama initiative, which calls for an investment of $75 billion in early childhood education programs for kids from birth to age 5, and builds on new investment in pre-K education in New York. Congressman Tonko.
I want to applaud New York because they did pick up on that vision of ages ago and do a first-time real funding of $25 million for new full-time and part-time slots for Head Start, especially in trouble areas, economically challenged areas. The president, in his messaging, in his outreach to Congress, is asking for $75 billion so that every youngster has the link to Head Start. It helps parents who require work to be able to strengthen their own family situation. So this is an all-around value-added concept.
Billy Easton, executive director for the Alliance for Quality Education, says pre-K is the most cost-effective investment that can be made in early childhood education.
It improves students' outcomes in terms of their readiness for school, their success actually in college. Young people who go to pre-K end up making more money in life. So it's a no-brainer educationally. We need to make the investments. The state's increasing their investment in pre-K, and we need to support the president's plan for pre-K.
But then we hear from those folks who are saying that, okay, great, we've got pre-K, but now we're going to have to either cut back or cut down or close kindergarten because we don't have the funding.
Well, you know, there's definitely an issue at the state level with the state is not providing adequate level of funding for our K-12 education. But it's a false choice, really. We need both things. Pre-K will help kids succeed. And we, of course, need high-quality K-12 education for all students.
Congressman Tonko adds that far too many kids entering kindergarten are already behind fellow students.
That's a sad notion for them, to have to now try to keep pace and gain ground can be a demoralizing situation, a defeating situation for far too many youngsters. And for us as a society, we need to grow our intellect. We need to be robustly competitive in a global economy. And so, in a way, it's a self-serving thing, but analyses will tell us that 75% of the brain is developed by kindergarten. 85% of your personality, your intellect, and your social skills are developed by kindergarten.
Albany Head Start Early Learning Supervisor Kenyette Curry works with 90 families and their children. She says she has seen the difference pre-K makes in shaping minds and establishing social skills.
I want to urge people to support funding for universal pre-K because, as the African proverb says, it takes an entire village to raise a child, and we really need every parent, every grandparent, every businessman, everybody to know that this problem affects all of us on such a large scale.
On Saturday, thousands attended a public education rally outside the Capitol in Albany. The biggest concern at the New York State United Teachers event was what the union terms as an over-reliance on standardized testing under the state's Common Core standards and the funding it takes to administer those tests. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A U.S. senator and two congresspeople from New York say they are working to protect the Hudson Valley as well as promote tourism and recreation. And they're hoping to garner support to study the area for the potential to be designated as a national park. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congressional Representatives Nita Lowey and Sean Patrick Maloney, all Democrats, are behind three pieces of legislation they say would continue to shine a national spotlight on the Hudson River Valley region from Saratoga to Westchester counties. Last week, Gillibrand announced legislation that would extend and enhance federal programs that provide the Hudson Valley with access to the resources to promote tourism and conservation. One is to reauthorize the area as a National Heritage Area. Another, says Gillibrand, is the Special Resources Study Act.
We also have to work to gain even more federal investment by studying regional resources to determine the sustainability and suitability and feasibility of establishing sites as part of the national park system. This study would look at the economic development impact to our region. It could mean additional federal investment to preserve heritage sites and increase local tourism, which would allow businesses in the area to sustain themselves and grow.
The three are sponsoring the act to study the area that contains the counties abutting the Hudson River, from Rogers Island at Fort Edward in Washington County to the southern boundary of Westchester County. The Hudson River Valley, already designated a federal national heritage area, with more than 100 historic sites ranging from the presidential to the cultural, would lose matching federal funding without reauthorization. Congresswoman Lowy, the senior Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, talks about what was accomplished before the authorization expired.
We really ensured that this year, the Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area will receive $435,000 from the federal government. These funds are leveraged with other public and private resources to produce an annual contribution of around $538 million to the state's economy, supporting 6,530 jobs, generating $66.6 million in tax revenue.
She says reauthorizing the designation is vital to preserving jobs and economic benefits. Gillibrand, Lowy, and Maloney have introduced legislation for reauthorization, which they announced at Boscobel in the hamlet of Garrison. Boscobel is a federal-style house of the late 18th and early 19th centuries, and it's a national heritage site. Stephen Miller is executive director of Boscobel.
Well, what it does is it puts Boscobel on the map even more. We're already on the map. We have a lot of people coming. But as part of that collaboration, for instance, today we had a visit by Chalk, T-A-U-C-K, Tours. They're one of the preeminent international tour companies. These people came down from Montreal to see our site and discuss bringing tours here that would originate in Montreal and come down here. So it's that broader international perspective that we're interested in.
State Senator Terry Gibson, whose district includes the Boscobel site, says he would like to ensure preservation in tandem with the federal level.
There is a lot more that we can do to put some regulations out that make sure that we protect these really beautiful sites so that our tourism economy can benefit from it, so that our economy can benefit from the tourists coming here to see these sites. We just can't take it for granted that places like Boscobel would be here tomorrow if we don't make the effort to take care of it. They're beautiful sites, they're real treasures, and I'm committed to doing just that.
And here's Congressman Maloney.
As long as I have an opportunity to serve in the Congress, I will be your partner, and we are going to work every day to make sure that we live up to our responsibilities to our kids and to the United States for this beautiful treasure that we have custody of for the time that we're given.
Meanwhile, Gillibrand says she plans to introduce legislation to reauthorize the Highlands Conservation Act. The highlands stretch from Pennsylvania across to New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, with some 3.5 million acres. Lowy and Maloney are co-sponsors of the legislation in the House.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1324. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics for the Legislative Gazette. I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.